Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and I can't start my day without hearing that voice. I tune in every day, even when I'm not on, just so I can hear Blog Talk Radio. Okay. I bet you she's pretty hot. I mean, because it's warm over
in England. I think she is. She must be.
Okay, that's enough of that. I mean, it's very funny because Hezzy, before we came on, was saying, how you doing? Is it hot down there? And it just brought to mind the fact that Marilyn a couple of times last week said, do you think it's going to be hot today? And my response to her was the same it was to Hezzy. It's Florida and it's summertime. What do you think it's going to be? Okay, no, you better get out your winter coat because it's going to snow today. Okay? I'm sorry. Okay. You got to have a little humor in the morning. Good morning, Marilyn. I hope you don't mind I made fun of you. Okay. Boy, am I going to catch it later.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
You know, sometimes it isn't worth the laugh, really.
It's a given.
Good morning, everybody. This is Jeffrey Swartz, together with my compatriot, Brendan Beery, his onerous, soon-to-be chairman of our faculty conference. Congratulations. He doesn't feel that way, congratulations, Brendan. Another week or so. Yeah. He just got elected vice chair to replace somebody else, and now the one who's the chair is quitting and going into an administrative position. So in the space of a week, he's gone from, I'm just sitting here doing my job, to all of a sudden now he's going to be the chairman of the faculty conference for the next 2 years. I love it too. I mean, I think he's going to be great at it. So congratulations, Brendan. Better you than
thanks,
me.
Thanks, thanks.
Thank God it's not me. Okay, I'm too old. Okay? I'm too old. You're much younger than I am. You can take this. I'm too old for this stuff. Okay? Okay, so you've heard from Brendan. That's it for him for today.
I got nothing else.
Okay. He's out of material. We are professors of law at WMU Cooley Law School, and I'm supposed to say that the opinions that we give, and we give a lot of them, are our opinions and strictly our opinions. They are not the opinions of the administration of WMU Cooley Law School or its faculty at large or individually. And now that I've made fun of him for a while, good morning, Brendan.
How you doing? You know, I was thinking when you were talking about weather, I haven't seen my winter coat in 11 years.
Really?
I don't know if
did it run away from home?
I don't know.
Did it run away from home?
I just moved. I can't remember packing a winter coat. I have no idea if I even have a winter coat anymore. But,
could be at the cleaners. You just never took it back.
For 11 years.
Yeah, you left it at the cleaners.
Yeah, 11 years
11
ago,
years
right?
ago. Lots of luck finding it, pal.
God.
Yes.
I guess that's what happens when you live in Florida, and I only go north in the summer. You know, I don't go north in the winter months. So,
if you need a fur coat, I'll talk to Marilyn. She's got a whole closet full of them from when she lived in Arizona. Believe it or not, she lived in a place where it snowed on top of her mountain, so she needed winter coats, and it was cold in the winter in Atlanta and in Georgia where she was. So she had all these fur coats, and so, you know, they're sitting in a closet. They eat up a whole closet, by the way. So if you need a fur coat, just let me know. I'll find one for you there.
Okay. I look
splendid
in a fur coat. Yeah, right.
If you like mink?
I'm probably allergic to it.
Oh, okay.
I'd be a walking bundle of hives. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Beehives. Yeah, I got it. Okay. All right. So I think maybe we ought to talk about something really important at this point. Actually, your lack of a winter coat is very important. I don't want you to freeze. Okay. Yeah. All right. With all that said, we ate up 6 minutes right there. we start each show with a segment we call What Do You Really Think? When we get to spout off about something that just – you know, we just want to spout off about it because it bothers us, and a lot of things bother us. Today I'm going to go back to something I haven't talked about in a very long time because he's become relatively unimportant. because he hasn't got anybody to tag along with to look important. And that is the senior senator from the state of South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, who has been making headlines of sort. At least people are talking about him again. I guess, you know, no publicity is bad publicity. I have described, and by the way, I'm going to call him Mr. Graham, which is exactly what's happening in Georgia right now. I'll get to that in a minute. Mr. Graham apparently at some time during the month, I believe, of November of 2000, all on his own, I doubt that, made phone calls to Brad Raffensperger and other people in the state of Georgia attempting to get information and to encourage them to recount and basically, like Trump, find votes for Donald Trump. Now, again, I want to reiterate, okay, he is a senator from South Carolina, okay? Mm-hmm. I can't use the word, but what the F is he doing calling people in Georgia, okay? And he calls people in Georgia to try to influence their election. I have described Mr. Graham as being the sycophant's sycophant. He has made his career out of getting onto people's coattails, walking behind them with a roll of toilet paper, and cleaning up after the people that he's following. He, you know, and the one you might remember the most these days would be John McCain, where he tried to paint himself as John McCain Jr., ingratiated himself with the McCain family. But because of things that he did in supporting the former guy, orange hair himself, the McCain family basically disowned him. And as close as he claimed to be, he was given a one-line quote from the Bible at McCain's funeral, where 6 months before, he probably would have been one of the featured eulogists.
Mm-hmm.
He is now under investigation in Georgia, in that grand jury out of Fulton County, for the acts that he did in making these phone calls, which all came into Fulton County. When he found out he got a subpoena, and he got subpoenaed, the first thing he did was move to quash the subpoena on the basis that he is immune from being subpoenaed under the speech and debate clause, okay, of the, in the United States Senate. And that protects senators and congressmen and congresswomen from being forced to testify or talk about things or be sued for the things that they say on the floor of whatever house they're in, called the speech and debate clause. It was absurd to say that, and the court threw that out. It said, no, you weren't acting as part of the Senate. The Senate wasn't even in session, okay? And you're making phone calls to somebody in Georgia. How is that part of the speech and debate clause? By with that one. Then he came back with a claim, well, I'm doing my job as a senator because I'm investigating what happened because I'm the head of the Judiciary Committee, and we might have to come up with some laws to protect against some of these things happening. Okay, nobody's buying that one either because there's nothing on the agenda of the Senate Judiciary Committee that in any way, shape, or form even comes close to that. And nobody else on the committee, mostly the Democrats, screaming and yelling, what are you talking – I'm sorry, he's the ranking member. He's not the chairman. He's the ranking member. Okay, and the Democrats are saying, no, we're not even thinking about anything like that right now. So now realizing that he now needs to go back to court again, he has said, I'm entitled to have this matter heard in South Carolina because I'm a South Carolina senator. And the answer from the prosecutor in Alabama, the district attorney, she won't even call him Senator Lindsey Graham in her pleadings. She calls him Mr. Graham because she doesn't want the fact that he's a senator to have anything to do with it. This has nothing to do with him being a United States senator. And she wants to take that completely out of it, so she will not address him with his title. He's Mr. Graham. Lindsey Graham has one way out of this. Because if he has to testify, you know the question that's going to be asked. There's only one question we want to know. Did you make those phone calls because Donald Trump asked you to? And, of course, you know the answer to that is yes, because Lindsey Graham hasn't got a brain in his head enough to figure out to do those things on his own. He does nothing on his own. He's a coward. He does nothing on his own. So that's the only question. His only way out of this, his only way out of getting indicted, his only way out of facing a felony which will get him expelled from the United States Senate. And that, his whole life is the United States Senate. The guy has no life, literally no life, zero. Only way out, one way out. Answer that question and answer it truthfully. Roll over on Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that will save him. Because he doesn't have any excuse. He has no defense. And as was said in Bannon's trial last week, well, what's the use of going to trial, Judge, if you can't have any defense? And the judge looked down and said, you're right. You should consider that over the weekend. And that's what I really think.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently wherever Lindsey Graham went to law school, they didn't teach this thing called jurisdiction.
Jurisdiction? That sounds like a dirty word.
You know, just a minor little thing in the law, right? You're kind of gonna go. You're kind of gonna go to a court that has jurisdiction. That's all right. Well, whatever.
Right. We have great lawyers in the United States Senate. We got we got Ted Cruz.
Right.
We got Hawley. We got Graham. Okay, mm-hmm. We had what's his name? I can never remember his name from Pennsylvania. Okay, what's his name? Running for president.
Yeah.
Santorum.
Yeah.
We had Rick Santorum, brilliant guy. Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. They went to the Google school, the Google search school of law. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So, okay. All right. So forget that. Let's move on from that. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, relatedly, I gave some thought to what to start with this morning. But I think the most important thing as we approach the last in this series, Jeff and I spoke earlier, this is not going to be the last hearing that the committee has, but it'll be the last mm-hmm. in this particular set of hearings. And it's going to be in prime time. So we're expecting, unfortunately, I have a Thursday night class. I won't be home until 8:30 or 9. At any rate, we're expecting a well-produced and compelling case. And as we're approaching this, I thought, you know, what I'm really thinking this morning is the January 6th commission, I think going into this, there was some question whether they'd really add much. Certainly in my own mind, for people who pay attention. Anybody who pays attention and can discern what's right in front of them already knows what happened on January 6th, at least in broad strokes. But I have to say, I do think that the January 6th committee has really expanded our base of knowledge and understanding about what happened on January 6th. Yeah, and I know, Hezzy, when we talk, you often say that you're learning things that, even though you're one of those people who pays attention, very close attention, that things that you didn't, you know, you were not aware of.
Went right over my head.
Yeah, and a lot of this is stuff that none of us knew. I didn't know the names, you know, of these players going. I knew what happened, mm-hmm. right? But I didn't know the names of the players. I didn't know the granular detail. And look at what we know now. I count six different stages of this conspiracy, of this plot. to overthrow the government of the United States and the, our constitutional republic. Step one, excuse me, is set up the lie. And who did that? Who was the chief, the liar in chief? You know, set up the big lie that the election was stolen, there was massive fraud, there's no way that Donald Trump could have possibly lost an election. Donald Trump himself, obviously, was leading that. He wasn't a bit player. It's not a matter of what did Donald Trump know. Did he know that it was a lie? No, he was the driving force behind the lie. So that was what they had to do first, to lay the groundwork for everything else, is spread that lie, and boy, did they do it. Stage two was his attempt, and it was done right out in the open, to take over the Department of Defense and Department of Justice and to staff those departments with people who would do whatever he wanted. And he did this between losing the election and January 20th, 2021, when Joe Biden was inaugurated. So it was during that lame duck period of his presidency that he was trying to staff up these agencies with people. Obviously, he wanted the Department of Justice for obvious reasons, and he wanted his people at the Department of Defense because he wanted the military to be on board with him. And by the way, some of these stages were concurrent, but that's the first two. Set up the lie, take over DOD and DOJ, get all the professionals out, and put your loyal minions in. Stage three, get the states to quote-unquote find votes. The effort that Lindsey Graham participated in, as Jeff just described, to simply get Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, to get Republican officials in those states to find some way to find more votes. Now, who orchestrated this? So who orchestrated the lie? Donald Trump. This is what we know now from the January 6th committee. Who orchestrated the attempted takeover of DOJ and DOD? Donald Trump. Who was on the phone or directing people to get on the phone with state officials to quote-unquote find votes? Donald Trump. Wasn't not a question of whether he knew. He did it. He was the one driving it. Mm-hmm. Next, get electors, fake electors, to work with Mike Pence, right? So that then there was the Eastman plan. So you look at the stages of this thing, and who was the driving force behind that? Obviously, Eastman and Sidney Powell and all of these jokers, Giuliani, were the ones who created this plan. but it was Donald Trump, of course, who pushed it. So there's no question he knew about it. No question he wanted Mike Pence to go along with it. He directly pressured Mike Pence. We now know from Donald Trump's own daughter that he was on the phone shouting at Mike Pence that they had a big fight about this, right? And so this committee has changed the question from did Donald Trump know about this to what did Donald Trump do, right, as the driving force behind it. It's not a question of what he knew. He was the primary actor trying to get the fake elector scheme executed on January 6th. Stage five, when all that failed, call in the mob. Okay, if we can't do that, if Mike Pence is not going to go along with breaking the law, right, and doing this by throwing Congress into chaos, then it's time for violence. And so Donald Trump, as soon as he found out that, you know, as soon as he really understood that this plan was not going to be executed by Mike Pence on the 6th, that's when he tweeted out, come to Washington. He summoned the mob. Did he have somebody else do it? No, he did it himself. He did it himself. He's the one who summoned the mob. And, of course, step six was to lead the mob to execute an insurrection at the Capitol. And we now know that Donald Trump not only wanted to go with his crowd. Could you just imagine this scene? Donald Trump himself leading this violent mob to the Capitol. That's what he wanted to do. That's what he tried to do. That's what he ordered Secret Service agents to do, and they wouldn't do it. And these are the things we now know. For certain. And it's no wonder that Donald Trump is accelerating his plans to announce that he's running for president, because he's under the impression that if he runs for president, he can't be criminally charged. Because those stages that I just ran through, set up the lie, take over key agencies in the federal government, get states to find votes that don't exist, set up fake electors and get Pence to deny the election results, call in the mob and lead an insurrection. Every one of those stages is a part of a massive conspiracy. And who was at the center of it? Donald Trump. So Merrick Garland needs to get his act together and unleash the Department of Justice on this guy.
Well, that's kind of what we were talking about that you brought up in our conversation this morning. And that is the basically the extension, as you put it, of the protection letter that Bill Barr wrote regarding presidential immunity or not going after people while they're running for the presidency and, in essence, running for other political office. And I'm about to sneeze, so I'm kind of trying to hold it off. Okay. I'm holding off a sneeze.
God bless you in advance.
Oh, thank God keep you.
Preemptively.
God watch over you. So my father used to say. You know, Brendan and I have kind of slightly differing opinions on this. Basically, Brendan told me he was very offended by the idea that Merrick Garland would extend that thought process from Bill Barr.
No, not the thought process, the memo.
But the thought process being in writing, extending the opinion letter from Bill Barr, which is
he cited a letter, the memorandum from literally cites the memorandum from William Barr.
Right.
Yeah, the guy who tried to protect Trump.
Yeah, and I got it. Yeah. And I got it, and although I think it optically looks bad, it literally has no material effect. Because what it says is that none of these things can be done without the approval of the Attorney General, and I can tell you that there is no national politician who has ever been indicted. And there are a lot of local politicians who have not been indicted by the federal government without the express permission, either directly from the Attorney General or from the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division, who would not do it without talking about it with the Attorney General anyway. So this really doesn't set forth any new policy. But what it does do, and I agree, the optics are bad, that Garland would adopt anything that was written by Bill Barr, because Bill Barr's motives were not pure. Bill Barr's motives clearly were to protect Donald Trump, as you have said. So it's an optic problem. It's like fist bumping with MBS. It doesn't look good to the administration. It doesn't look good to Merrick Garland. If he was going to do something like this, let him write his own opinion and put his own name to it and not cite somebody else's. I'm with you on that. I'm 100% with you on that. Okay? But to the same extent, if he does indict Donald Trump, if the department does indict Donald Trump, you know at that point it had to come from him.
Mm-hmm.
And it couldn't be done without him. So he puts himself right there and says, I think the message really is, as much as it's poorly written, is this is going to be my decision. I decide. Nobody but me is going to decide. It's a bad way to send the message, but it's the message nonetheless. That's the way I see it. But But, yeah. Yes, he has to get on the stick because
yeah.
you cannot allow this case, if it is filed, to get into 2024.
Right.
That trial has to start within maybe 15 to 16 months from now because it will take months to try the case. And they'll be a bitch and a moan that it's primary season and they're affecting the primaries. Well, that's too bad. And if the Republican Party wants to nominate somebody who's under indictment, that's their decision because it's the Republican Party. It's not the American public. But once the conventions are over, then we have a problem. So he's got to get on the stick and start issuing indictments, I think, during this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Before the midterms. He cannot wait till after the midterms. And politically, I understand the problem. The problem is that they'll yell and scream that he did it before the midterms because he wanted to put Republicans in a bad light. Well, all you got to do, Republicans, is say, we don't want Donald Trump. He's a criminal. Look what he tried to do. That's all you got to say. But they're not willing to say that. They're not willing to tell other Republicans, you can't follow this guy anymore. And besides, that gives us free rein to go after Ron DeSantis, who took a big hit on Morning Joe this morning.
Oh, yeah?
A big hit. Oh, a huge hit. They went after him with a vengeance for about 45 minutes. Four segments about Ron DeSantis and how bad he is. He was their favorite target today. He was their Bobo today. And for those of you who don't know what a Bobo is, it's a toy. It's a blow-up toy with a weight at the bottom, and kids could punch it, and it would fall over and then pop right back up again. Okay, so he was their Bobo today. I'm walking on the street, and I'm listening to this. So that's kind of the way that I see what's going on. And I know you don't agree with me. I know that you're very offended by this.
We're not disagreeing. I don't disagree with you. He's okay. The one who has to make the decision. So let's go. Get moving. He's the one I'm directing this to. Get moving.
Okay, I understand, but you're unhappy about citing Bill Barr. Okay.
Just
think, if he cites Bill Barr and he does it anyway, then he feels that Bill Barr should have done it too. I mean, kind of in a way, it's a slap at Bill Barr as much as it's a compliment, but it's the wrong thing. He's the wrong guy. You don't channel Bill Barr right now. The only place I want to channel Bill Barr is down the river somewhere or up the river. One of the used to be, you go up the river going to Sing Sing. They would say you're going up the river. Okay.
It's funny because some of these people are now painted as, being heroic for their testimony in front of the January 6th. People need to keep in mind the only thing that was too far for Bill Barr was an actual insurrection. I mean, up until that point, he was with Donald Trump. Right. He was with him all the way. And that's not
that was,
heroic.
That was a bridge too far, as they like to say from World War II. It was a bridge too far.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to a different subject that we wanted to talk about, which is the Mississippi opinion regarding in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, the abortion case, for lack of a better way to put it. I'd like to call it the choice case, but that's beside the point. There was an interesting article on CNN, and I give credit to this by a guy named Elliot McLaughlin, who is, by the way, a Catholic. So before I even start all of this, who is a Catholic, who really goes after the Supreme Court in the way that I have. And here's what it comes down to. Alito refers to, in the Roe decision, a fetus was referred to as potential life. Did not recognize it as a life. It's only a life when it can be sustained outside of the mother's womb. Then it is, quote, living. Alito referred to a fetus as unborn human being. Those three words changed the abortion debate in its entirety and turned it on its head. Those three words are the basis of everything else that is written in the Dobbs decision. And it comes down to religion. As he says, Alito didn't write God or Christianity or Bible anywhere in the opinion, but his justification is a veiled religious narrative. And that's a quote from Rebecca Peters, a religious studies professor at Elon University. Basically, he takes this language and gives credence to the notion embraced largely by the religious far right, and that includes the Catholic Church, that life begins at fertilization. And embolden this absolutism that we have seen in a number of states. Now, what was interesting today, I was looking at some of the polls and listening to some commentaries, and what everyone is saying now is that there are many politicians who have been put in a position by the far religious right and their absolutism into taking positions that are unpopular, even in red states. This absolutism that is going to continue and carry itself to other areas, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. And the fact of the matter is that they understand that they are flying in the face of the vast majority of their own citizens. That's why they won't talk about abortion. When you ask them about abortion, they talk about anything but abortion. They understand that is a losing issue for them. It pisses off their own base, and many people in their own base. And they're starting to understand that there's an old expression that says, be careful what you ask for, you might just get it. Well, they've been asking for it for 50 years, and they finally got it, and now they don't know what to do about it because people don't want it. Snake oil salesmen is what we used to call them. The fact of the matter is that the idea of whether an embryo is a person is science versus religion. Science sees a person, a human being, as being a living being that is sentient. That is, that they are capable of knowing, having an ego, being aware of who they are and where they are, being able to learn. That's what sentience is all about. An embryo, until it is capable of living outside the womb, is not sentient. It is not aware of its surroundings. It is not aware of itself. That's science. They're not capable of living on their own. That's science. So where does fertilization come from? It comes from the Bible, and it starts with the Catholic Church, which came across with all of these rules about no birth control, having lots and lots of babies, no sex unless you're making a baby, because population was power. After the Great Plague, population was power, and the Catholic Church held most of the power. And so therefore, by having Catholics, it would follow whatever the Pope said, gave the Pope power over just about every country in Western Europe until Henry VIII came along. And there's so much disagreement even within Christian sects, and that's S-E-C-T-S, by the way, that they're trying to establish this moral right. And it's just, it's not working for them anymore. But I have said in the past that these six, and that includes Roberts, who I guess recently has decided he's going to go along with the program because he denied a motion to stop one state law from going into effect, an absolutist law, by the way. But the basic five who decided to overrule Roe are all Catholics, all devout Catholics, all who grew up in Catholic doctrine and are pushing their religion upon all of us. Their decision was not constitutional, it was biblical. And the additional decisions, which we're going to talk about that are coming, whether it be Obergefell, which is same-sex marriage, or Griswold, which is contraception, or whether it is, what's the Texas case?
Lawrence versus Texas, yeah.
Yeah, Lawrence versus Texas, which goes into your bedroom and decides what kind of sex you can have and whether you can have it with a same-sex partner. These are all religious decisions. They're not legal decisions. People who are gay are human beings and they can make their own choices. You have no right to use the Constitution against them. The Constitution stands for them. And yet they're ready to turn back the clock. It's like, this is a Catholic boogeyman, and it gives right-wing Republicans the boogeyman of all boogeymen. We're going to go after gays, just like Hitler did. Everybody talks about the Jews. He went after gays. He went after gypsies. He went after people who were feeble-minded, as they used to call them, who suffered from mental difficulties. Hated the gays. Hated them. And as a result of which, this is just their Catholicism. I'm sorry. But no, I am not going to learn catechism. I'm a Jew. My Bible came first. And by the way, stop misquoting my Bible. You want to know what my Bible says? There are millions of Jews in this world you can ask questions of. They'll answer them for you for the right price. It's a joke. Stop using my Bible. And just remember, the guy whose Bible you read was a Jew. You got any comments on any of this?
Yeah, I don't know. Keep going.
No, I'm done. I'm done. It's your turn. Yeah. It's your turn.
All right.
I pissed off the entire Catholic population of this country. Your turn.
Yeah. That's,
I'm going to have to go to confession
today.
I'm going to have to go to confession.
Well,
okay.
Better you than me.
I think so. I think so.
Yeah. Be the first time in the history of the Catholic Church that the priest says, no, you're not forgiven.
Can I have communion, please? Give me a piece of matzah. It's a Manischewitz wine. Go ahead.
It is a serious, a very serious problem. And our friend Ted Cruz is signaling, we spent way too long.
He's not my friend. He may be yours, but he's not my friend.
I think I was being a little bit sarcastic there.
Okay. I understand. That was rhetoric.
Yeah. Yes, right. our buddy, Ted Cruz. So we spent too much time listening to people say, they can't do that. They can't overturn Roe versus Wade. They can't happen. That's not going to happen. It did happen. And they're signaling where they're going next, both on the Supreme Court and Clarence Thomas's concurring opinion and politically. Now a U.S. senator from Texas is saying that Obergefell, the case that required states to license same-sex marriage, that it was wrongly decided. He's using the same kind of language about that case that they used about Roe. You have the attorney general in Texas arguing or saying that he will argue if the Supreme Court decides to revisit. And I'm glad you mentioned Lawrence versus Texas, because in case anybody thinks that this assault on LGBTQ rights is limited to marriage, you are mistaken. They're going after Lawrence versus Texas. Lawrence versus Texas is the case where the court said that a state may not criminalize same-sex intimate relationships. We have the Attorney General of Texas saying that if the Supreme Court revisits that case, he will argue that the state can. Let me repeat that. That the state can make it a crime for people of the same sex to have an intimate physical relationship. And this is far right, biblical, I'll call it what it is, nonsense. In a country where the Constitution, which of course makes no mention of any God, promises us that we live in a free society. I have to say, how does it promise us that? Well, the due process clauses in the Constitution say that the government may not deprive us of life, liberty, or property without due process. That presumes that we have life, liberty, and property. We have these rights. What does liberty mean? The government can't take away your liberty. What does liberty mean? Liberty means freedom. The Constitution guarantees that we live in a free society. It also guarantees the equal protection of the laws, and that's not just race or ethnicity. Conservatives love to argue that. Oh, the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution, which says no state may deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws, right? But that's just there to protect ethnic groups. It's not there to protect any other group, like women or gays or anything like that. Well, you call yourself strict textualists, right? That you stick to the text. Read it again, folks. What does it say? Does it say anything about ethnicity in there? Somebody point me to where the Equal Protection Clause talks about ethnicity or race. You can't, because what does it say? It says every person is guaranteed the equal protection of the laws. You can't, the government may not target groups arbitrarily for sport. That's what the Constitution says. But that's not consistent with what Samuel Alito's Bible says. One of the interesting tenets, I've done some studying about this and some writing about it too. You know, you wonder, why is it that right-wing Christians can't leave people alone? You know, live your own life the way you want to live your own life. Pray your own prayers. Raise your own family however you want to raise your family. And leave everybody else alone. Let women make their own choices. It's a matter of dialysis. It's a matter of jurisdiction. Let gay people live their own lives. Why can't they just go away and leave everybody alone? Well, you know why? Because they can't. Because a tenet of their religion is evangelizing. It's not enough for them, for their religion, that they live lives that they consider biblical. They have to convert others. They have to save others from sin. And that's why you constantly have this religious right intruding into the lives of women, intruding into the lives of gay people, intruding into the lives of transgender people. They consider it a tenet of their faith that they must stop others from sinning. So, you know, no contraceptives for you. It's not just that we're not going to use contraceptives. You can't use them either because I'm saving you from damnation. That's what their faith teaches. So I can't get into heaven unless I save somebody else.
Yeah, but if you're a Jehovah's Witness, there's only 500 people going, so what the hell? If you're going to hell, you might as well go the way you want to go.
Yeah, right. But,
remember,
yeah,
there's only 500 people. There's only 500 people going to go to heaven, okay? Mm-hmm. And if you're not a Jehovah's Witness, you're not going.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and since I'm not a Jehovah's Witness, I might as well enjoy myself because I'm
going, according
to what they're telling me. I'm going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
I think that here's and here's exactly how we started this conversation, and I've wanted to talk about this, and so I'm gonna start it, although we're not even gonna come close to finishing. This country has a constitution. But you have to remember that after we wrote the Constitution, within a year, we had already proposed 13 amendments to the Constitution, of which only 10 actually were ratified. We started immediately changing it. We have gone through cycles every 40 years or so where we have reacted to either radical political ideas or radical Supreme Courts by amending the Constitution. And these amendments come in groups of four or five over a very short period of time. And it's happened that way in this country consistently since its founding. But here we are now 50 years since we've amended the Constitution. Because we had to react, the document had to react to what was happening in our country. So when people say it's not a living and breathing document, then there would be no amendments. That's the truth. Look at the amendments, whether it's women's suffrage, whether it's giving 18-year-olds the vote, whether it is coming up with a means for a president to have a vice president if the vice president succeeds to the presidency, whether it was prohibition and then repealing prohibition, whether it was the due process clauses of the 14th Amendment, whether it was doing away with slavery. This country has fixed things that were wrong through as Fonzie would say, okay, that were wrong by amending the Constitution to reflect what our society was and what it was and what it shouldn't be, and made it what it is. And yet people ignore that. We are a constitution of amendments. Here in Florida, I can't even tell you how many amendments there have been to the Florida Constitution. I've lost count at 100. But the fact of the matter is that that's what we do. So when these originalists say we got to go back to what the Constitution says, they want to ignore that there are amendments there. They want to go back all the way to 1787. Because the amendments aren't original. Because they weren't done by the founding fathers. I consider anyone who proposed and anyone who passed in Congress an amendment to the Constitution to be a founding father or mother, sister or brother, but they ignore that. They forget when you amend the Constitution, you're making it part of the document. But, you know, I don't know, it's an amendment, it doesn't count. Of course it counts. So when you say it's not a living and breathing document, all you got to do is look at it, actually read it. Don't tell me that, you know, I know the Second Amendment. Well, great. What about the rest of the Constitution? You pay attention to the rest of it? No, because it doesn't matter to me. Okay, well, yeah, it does. How about all the amendments? The Equal Rights Amendment, of all things, right now the Equal Rights Amendment should be reconsidered. It'll never get ratified. It should be reconsidered because if you read the Equal Rights Amendment, it doesn't apply just to women. It applies to everybody. Now, we don't have time to talk about the need for amendments and in what areas we should be amending. We can do that next week. Because there's 5 or 6 or 7 of them, things that should change that are important to reflect our very large, very diverse society. But the idea that the Supreme Court is pulling back on rights because they disagree with an interpretation of an amendment or going back to the originalist idea that if it didn't exist when the amendment passed, then the amendment doesn't incorporate it? Seriously? Alito doesn't really believe that. It just stands in the way of his catechism. We need to start thinking about the amendments that are necessary to protect our democracy, to protect our republic, and to protect the people within it from radicalism, which is what we have done consistently through our history. Enough. Originalism. You were born 200 years too late, people. Get on board or get out of the way. I'm not going to do this to two-thirds of this population because 30% want to go back to Ozzy and Harriet and sleep in separate beds and put gays back in the closet, raid the nightclubs they like to go to. Persecute them. Persecute women who want to exercise control over their bodies. Enough with this originalism. If you read the entire Constitution and you look at the dates on it, you will see that we have been progressive for 240 years. Why are we stopping now? We have always reflected badly against reactionary forces. And we have a reactionary theology tendered Supreme Court, and we need to react against it in every possible way we can. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, it is. It is scary, yeah, and it's you know, this whole originalism thing, it's only recently that took over the U.S. Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, up until the last couple of appointments, even Republicans who were on, Republican appointees, Blackmun, Souter, Kennedy, people like that, they were not originalists. They were living constitutionalists. They absolutely believed that our understanding of the word liberty can change with our culture and our norms and our understanding of science, right? That these things can change what it means to live in a free society. But the originalist takeover of the Supreme Court, which didn't happen until the Trump presidency, its aim is absolutely to drag us back into the 1700s and 1800s, and they're very explicit about that.
I think they should take away their limousines or their SUVs and make them ride to work in a horse and buggy.
Right. Yeah, right.
Because, you know, there's no automobile exception because we don't have mm-hmm. automobiles anymore.
Right.
There weren't any
right.
automobiles back then, so there's no mm-hmm. automobile exception to the Fourth Amendment.
God.
By the way, I just want to, in closing, I want to let everybody who's listening to us as they're driving down the Florida Turnpike, I want to let them know mm-hmm. that the Turnpike is back open again. They got the 70 cows out of the road, okay? okay. A truck had broke down or caught fire, and he had to let all the cows out of the back of the truck, and they were roaming around the Turnpike, and it shut the Turnpike down for 4 hours. It's open again. Just want to let you know, okay?
Are the cows okay?
Traffic. Yeah, the cows are all okay. They're all okay. All right, okay? Mm-hmm. But they were roaming around, I think it was the northbound side, for about 4 hours. Okay. All right, they shut the road down. I just thought, just a little something funny to end everything with. You know, it's all DeSantis' fault, by the way. All right, so.
Of course it is. Yeah.
Okay, it's just all DeSantis' fault. Okay. Okay, those liberal cows. Yeah, Cowgate. Yeah, there you go. Okay, yeah. Cowgate. I got it. Okay. Okay. So what do you got to close with here? Because we got a couple of minutes, I think.
Oh, let's see. I think we covered most of what I had. Did we talk enough about the Bannon trial? Yeah, two things to watch the next couple of days. Steve Bannon, which should be a quick trial, I think, right? From
everything. They'll be done by the end of the week.
Yeah.
They'll be done by the end of the week.
Yeah.
The jury selection did teach us something.
Yeah, right, right.
People are not paying attention. There are people from the District of Columbia who had no idea who Steve Bannon was, had no idea what the committee was doing, had no idea what that was all about. They had a riot at the Capitol in Washington, D.C., and these people have no idea what this is about. Okay? The dumbing of America. Okay? I'm sorry. Okay? But apparently they'll have a jury, and there is a ruling. Apparently the government wanted to introduce the letters from Benny Thompson that went with the subpoenas. And the defense wanted in, the government wanted him to be redacted because they talked about executive privilege and stuff like that. So they're going to argue a few admission issues, but this case will be over by Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I think the government's only putting on three witnesses.
Yeah, because there's not a whole lot to prove here.
The,
he got
the process server?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The process
yeah, right.
server?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
The guy who issued the subpoena, the clerk of the House, and mm-hmm. a member of the committee.
Yeah.
And then they put right. in some documents that authorized him to issue subpoenas, and it's over.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's. But it's an interesting observation you have that, you know, to get on this jury, you know, people have to. You know, have to have no opinion about it, which means they have to not know about it, which means by definition, it's going to be a jury of ignoramuses. Right?
Because, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you
yeah.
can't get on the yeah, jury unless you don't yeah. know anything.
Yeah, so, yeah. The products of the public school system. No question about it. Okay. I just, you know, first of all, there's always the question, can you really believe them when they say they don't know what this is about? There's always been my issue with the high publicity. Are they really telling the truth? Do they really don't know anything at all? I find that so hard to believe. I really do sometimes. Okay, and if I was the prosecutor, that was okay. If I was a defense attorney, maybe not so much. Okay, it
yeah,
your
right.
perspective. Okay. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, that's
I've
going
got
on.
My,
don't forget Thursday
I've got
night.
My meeting.
Nope.
Yeah, Thursday night. My meeting too. Here is starting. So. Take care, Hezzy. Have a great week. And we'll talk about Thursday.
Okay, Hezzy, you take care of yourself, okay, please.
And you too.
Okay?
What a pleasure.
We need you.
Thank you very much for today.
We wouldn't be on the
yeah.
air without
Go
you.
Away.
We need you, okay?
All right. All right.
Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Okay?
Sounds good. Bye-bye.
Be well. Thank you so
right.
much.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. So there we have it, Brendan Beery and Jeff Swartz, both from WMU Cooley Law School at the Tampa, Florida campus. So always a pleasure to hear them. So lucid. It's just amazing. You know, it's like a cacophony of ignorance, and yet they're the ones that are so brilliant, which is phenomenal. Well, that's a story for us today. I've got a doctor's appointment, which I had not expected, nothing urgent, but they keep me afloat, and they keep me alive, and they keep me going, and so I can't be more than thankful for that. And that keeps me on the air, which is always good, too. So I don't think we have anything else particularly to mention today. So just have a great day. Today's Tuesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow on Wednesday. I don't even remember who's on for tomorrow. Let me just quickly look at the calendar and see who's on, because I don't remember. Let me just see where we are. Where is it? One thing's for sure, it's very, very hot up here in the Northeast. So be very, very careful as far as heat's concerned. And where is the calendar here? Okay. Whoa. Okay, there's got to be another way to look for it. Bear with me a second. If I look for it, here's the calendar. I forgot. Tomorrow's Wednesday. Orin M. Levin Waldner, who's our regular guest on Wednesday, he's not going to be, he's not in the country, so he's left. He wasn't on last week, 2 weeks ago either. So he'll be out again tomorrow. And that'll give me an opportunity to catch up with some other items as well. And so we're not going to be doing a broadcast, I don't think, just to be able to allow me to catch up with so many other things, because I've been pulled away for this, that, or the other. So in a sense, it's great, because we'll have a little bit of a break for tomorrow. Anyway, so that's the story. So we'll speak to you on Thursday, and we'll speak to Brian Harrod, I believe, from Yonkers Newswire, and with me. And that's how we'll spend the time together on Thursday. Have to check to see what we're going to be doing on Friday. I think that we'll be speaking to Nader Sayers, if he's got enough time for us. So we'll see, and where all that goes. Okay, so let's get back to the studio screen, and here we are, and we'll speak to you on Thursday. So all the best. Take care and goodbye. Where is it? Episode. Okay, we're going to end the episode now. Have a great day. Goodbye.